Simple Broken Mind podcast. I'm your host, Kevin. Robin, I've returned.
Welcome back, Kevin.
Thank you.
Good to see you in the host position.
Yes, once again, to talk about a movie I dread seeing. We might as well get into it. Let's get to our guest. Barrett.
Hi, I'm so excited to be back to talk about another crazy movie.
Yes, a movie that we both agree on, but the catalyst of this movie, the guest I'm going to introduce you next, Elizabeth Kirkland, you have forced me to see another bad fantasy film. This is the theme.
Not bad.
It's just dated.
I don't think a single film you've suggested has been over a Rotten Tomatoes score of 60.
But they all have very serious cult followings.
Okay, that's, seriously, though. And they were all made within, the same, 10-year span?
I don't know.
They were all between 1980 and 1985.
Okay, so I was about to say, so it's not just a cult following. And, I mean, I'm sure we'll get into a whole lot more, but what I will say about Return to Oz.
We haven't even said the movie yet. You just buried the lead, Barrett.
I'm so sorry. Kevin, what movie are we going to be talking about?
Robin, as co-host, why don't you just say what we're here to talk about, this horrible, horrible film.
Well, I was going to say, for Kevin's triumphant return, we're going to be discussing a Return to Oz.
Yay!
Now, by all means, Bear, go into my spiel. Your soapboxing.
All I was going to say was that, I'm on Team Kevin in the sense that, I had the majority of my feelings about this film as I was watching it were not positive. I was like, what is happening right now? But that being said, it sounded, looked like, smelled like, whatever you want to say, like a movie that was made between 1980 and 1985.
And absolutely.
As a child of, someone who was born in 1983, there is a soft spot in my heart for those films. That's why I said that I was super excited that Elizabeth was going to be on the podcast, because I knew that she was going to walk into this being like, I love this movie. It's one of my most favorite movies. And I was super excited for her to win me over. I want her to come back and be like, but, and me to be like, oh, okay, now I like it.
Yes, allow me to woo you.
Elizabeth, please tell us, what is this movie?
Can I say one thing real first that stuck out to me so hilariously? So I watched this on Disney Plus. I don't know about the other places where you watch it, but it prefaces it with rated PG, tobacco ingestion.
Oh, really?
And then immediately they're putting electroshock stuff on Dorothy, and I'm like, really? The dark part is the tobacco, not the 10-year-old being strapped to a bed about to get electroshock therapy?
Okay. Or the deadly desert scene.
The Wheelers, I'm sure we'll get to them too. They scared me. They were creepy.
Elizabeth, yes. Is it about gaslighting?
Oh, no, it's about childhood trauma.
Okay.
Do we need a synopsis, breakdown?
Yeah, go ahead, give us your elevator pitch.
Sure. Return to Oz is a 1985 film featuring Fairuza Balk in her first feature role. It is an unofficial sequel produced by Disney with no affiliation with MGM.
Except
the Ruby Slippers, which was a whole thing. It takes place 6 months after the tornado hits. Dorothy is plagued with weird visions and thoughts. And so Aunt Em takes her to get electric shock therapy before we really even know what that is back in the day. And she ends up in a crate that has traveled to the deadly desert. She wakes from the deadly desert, and she goes with her chicken, Belina, who can now talk. She is her tie to home. Along the way, she meets TikTok, the Royal Army of Oz.
Not a app on the iPhone.
Right. And then she meets Jack Pumpkinhead, and they build the Gump, a flying flying animal palm tree couch. They escape from Princess Mombi, who's really a witch, go to the Gnome King to try to see what happened to all the emeralds and the Scarecrow and the Emerald City. And eventually they defeat the Gnome King, and Dorothy returns home, and she's still connected to Oz, but not in a crazy way, in a way that is acceptable for her to live as a child who has gone through some significant trauma.
This movie, and Elizabeth, I like to point out, Disney did a weird thing in the mid-80s of doing a lot of dark movies.
It was not a good time for Disney. Honestly, they were in such a weird, terrible place. So
they released my favorite one, which is The Black Cauldron.
That's a cult favorite too. Not a lot of people, that was seen as a failure from Disney.
Because there was no music and princesses.
There is also no singing here in Return to Oz. So
I also like that Dorothy looked closer to the age Dorothy is supposed to be.
Yeah, she's 10 years old. Yeah. In the books, she starts off, she's 9 years old.
Yeah. Shirley Temple was supposed to play Dorothy originally, and the studio would not release her from her contract.
Right.
And that's why they went with Judy Garland, because studios used to own their actors.
Right.
How old was Judy Garland at the time?
Like 16.
Yeah. So she gets all the horrible actor trauma of like, you're too fat, you have too many boobs, you blah blah blah, you know.
Wait, how can you have too many boobs?
You're supposed to be too much boobs.
Too much boobage.
Too much cleavage.
Well, too much boob for a 10-year-old, because 10-year-olds don't usually have boobs.
Right.
Go ahead, Brett.
I was curious, because that was one of the things that, like, I admittedly was not as educated on as I'm sure others are. And so I was curious, like, what does this film have any connection to or ties to the written story that, like, the Wizard of Oz... The movie does not like.
You mean these?
My dad. All right.
So Elizabeth,
before we move forward, like all I want to say about this is, and it's terrible. I'm admitting this publicly on something that's going to be broadcast, possible for millions of people to listen to. But The Wizard of Oz was my favorite movie as a young child, like. I probably watched it the first time when I was 3, and I watched it over and over and over and over and over and over again. I loved it. I was obsessed with it. I rewatched it actually during COVID, like last summer, like 7 months pregnant with my 5-year-old. I'm like wet through the whole thing. But I have not read, this is the embarrassing part, I have not read the books. I have not read the book series, and I should have. I need to remedy that. So when I was watching this movie, and like I was having all these feelings about it that were like, why would they do this to like this story that was so like beautiful and da 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 da. Then in my head, I was like, oh, Barry, you need to check yourself. Because there might be like some ties to like the legit true literature or whatever that you do not understand or that you're not giving credit to. And so I guess that's sort of like, that was my biggest looming question watching the film as somebody who is such a lover and like intimately knows The Wizard of Oz whole thing.
Jack Pumpkin is from the books.
They're all from the book.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't think you're alone here, Barrett, because I don't think other than Elizabeth here, who's our scholar about the World of Oz, I don't think anyone else has has read the books. The only reason
I did when I was way younger. My dad loved them, and I know they're way darker than
I'm assuming then you read multiple of the books.
Yeah, but it's been so long. I don't really remember. I just remember that the books were darker than what ended up in the original movie.
I only know that these characters were in other stories just because like you, Barrett, I only knew of the film and I thought that was the only story. But I remember as a young boy, I played a text adventure video game that had the drawing images as you go through the game. And after the witch, there was still more story where I did encounter Jack and the Gump and various other characters. I don't remember all the details, but I remember when I saw the movie, I remember, these are characters I discovered in the game, the text adventure game in there. So Elizabeth, I would say you're probably you've read multiple of these books.
Yeah, I'm on a long journey to collect as many of the antique books as possible before L. Frank Baum dies and then someone else takes it over and writes them for him and then they just turn to trash. So I think there's 15 in the originals before Baum dies. And this movie is actually more true to the books than the first MGM film was.
Yeah.
Especially like the big thing is the ruby slippers. They wanted the ruby slippers for the in color shots. Because they're silver slippers. And there's a whole background to like what the Cowardly Lion represents and what L. Frank Baum was talking about as far as like capitalism goes and how like the lion represents government without a heart and the Tin Man or the government as the Cowardly Lion without courage, based on like I forgot which public figure it was. It was a Democratic Party leader. And then the Tin Man represents industry. And then the Scarecrow represents agriculture and Oz is for OZ, how you're measuring, silver standard and gold standard in ounces. So her shoes were silver. They brought the ruby slippers back for Return to Oz. And that was a big fight with MGM, but, Disney was about to lose the rights to the whole Oz franchise. So it was kind of like, we just got to do what we can. But the books are darker. This film is a combination of Ozma of Oz and the Land of Oz or the wonderful, what is it?
It's Land of Oz, I think.
Yeah, the Land of Oz, the Marvelous Land of Oz, which has been printed both ways, the Land of Oz and the Marvelous Land of Oz. And then a couple of little snippets from TikTok of Oz later, but they don't really count. But all of the characters featured are actually in these books. There are a lot of characters missing, like the Scarecrow is supposed to have a lot more screen time, as is the Tin Man and the Cowardly Lion, but they had budget cuts and Walter Murch got fired, and then rehired because
I saw that.
The director, correct?
Yeah, it was the only feature film that Walter Murch, who's typically an editor and a sound designer, ever directed on his own, but he had George Lucas in his back pocket in case he was not going to be able to finish. So, but yeah, this one is more true to the actual books. The first one is kind of like it's a bubblegum musical, you know, with lots of color and sparkle and it's beautiful. It's a great thing on its own, but I wouldn't say it
wasn't that kind of color, like pretty new back
then.
Oh,
it was absolutely new.
And that's why
there were only a few cameras in the United States that could film in color.
Yeah.
And they had to be able to get all of those cameras together for that one film.
To make the pictures.
So it's really interesting that you say that to me, or that you say that, Elizabeth, only because when I was watching it last summer, I remember thinking to myself, like, as the mother of, like, young children, so somebody who is frequently engaging with content for young people, I remember thinking to myself when I was watching it, the MGM one, The Wizard of Oz, like, wow, this is pretty dark compared to what kids today
Watch.
Like, that was a movie that I was watching at 3 and 4 years old.
Right.
And, like, I think that there are a lot of parents who, like, you would play that for now, and they would be like, there's no way I would let my 3-year-old watch that. Like, it's way too scary.
Right.
I feel like Mary Poppins, in some ways, is kind of the same way, in similar ways, like, when the kids get lost. And so, I mean, just the movie feels, it felt a lot darker to me than your average kid movie.
Yes.
Day.
You want to see a dark kids movie? Show your kid Watership Down. They're gonna cry for a week.
Oh wow, that's lovely.
Yeah. That's like a cartoon rabbit movie with lots of blood, apparently.
Another movie from this era that scarred me had the same lady as that plays the Wicked Witch of the West in this, or the not the Wicked Witch, whatever she is, like the Empire. Yeah, she's the witch in Willow.
Yes, she is. Jean Marsh.
She's Bav Morda?
Yes. Could you not tell immediately? Her face is so distinct and terrifying as a kid.
Like going away in that like prison wagon. It's like, oh, I could see that.
Yeah.
So. There's a lot of ties to different films. Like Nicole Williamson was Merlin in Excalibur. Opposite of Helen Mirren, and they were also opposites when they played in Macbeth together, and they absolutely hated each other. They hated each other, and they were like, please do not cast us as opposites again.
Oh, no.
But then they became friends during Excalibur, so it's all good. They made up.
Yeah. It's all good. But so, like, when I was watching Return to Oz, you know, I mean, especially the beginning, like,
so dark.
Gets to Oz when you're dealing with the more mythical characters. I mean, forgive me, but like that shit is intense.
It's really intense. Those are big themes to address with children. Like, well, it's terrifying.
That and it never occurred to me that she was like. I mean, mentally
unwell.
Interesting for us to talk about, like the underlying message or the theme, like what the story represents.
Mm-hmm.
When we talk about like Wizard of Oz and like what's the message and what's the poignant thing, and then like Return to Oz, because I'll just recap for the audience, but like so at the beginning of the film. Dorothy, it continues as any young child would. How old is she in the books, Elizabeth?
She's 9 in the first book, and she's Firouzza Balk is 10 playing Dorothy. And since it's 6 months after, I don't want to know when Dorothy's birthday actually is, so she could be 10.
Right, but so as any young 9, 10-year-old child would, like, who's had some experience like this, like continuing to talk about it, you know what I mean? Like asking questions, talking about it. And her NTM thinks that she's psycho, like nutty. And so she takes her to get basically electroshock therapy. And everything like goes, you don't realize till the end, but the fantasy and the reality begin to become intertwined, like the moment that she enters into this,
right?
For lack of a better way of putting it, and then she finds herself back in Oz. But I mean, so just to put it into perspective, this is a children's movie. It's rated PG-13 or PG. In the first like 10 to 20 minutes of it, we're dealing with a 9 to 10 year old child who is basically told she's crazy, completely and totally not believed, sent to an institution, left alone in a cement room with a cot during a thunderstorm.
And also her dog got left behind and was crying for her, and they don't even go get the fucking dog.
This killed me. Listening to Toto cry.
Horrible. Yes. Like, yes, deceived to get there in the first place.
Yeah. Left
that room, then tied down to a stretcher and wheeled into a, you know, exam room or whatever, where she is hooked up to an electroshock therapy machine, and right before they fry her brain, the power blows because of this really, really creepy rainstorm. And that's like when the whole reality and fantasy starts to mix. So all I'm trying to say is that shit was like, I was watching it with my 6-year-old and I was like, okay.
It's scary. It's really scary.
Even the part where he's like, see, look, there's a machine on the face. Here are the eyes. Here's the note. Like, trying to be all... I'm like, God! And he's like, and look, it moves. I'm like, oh, my God. You're so fucking creepy, dude.
Oh, he's scary as hell.
Yes.
But let's take a moment here. And if we had a... Barrett has children, but if the rest of us had a child and a child came to us and says, I visited a land of witches and flying monkeys and tin men and living scarecrows and talking lions, would we immediately believe this child?
No, but I wouldn't shock them.
Well, I don't think, you know, we know now, like, that electroshock therapy is sometimes very beneficial for people, but, like, using it on children... at the turn of the century, when we're just starting to figure stuff out, like, you know,
right away, turn of the century, and the nurse has a flashlight. How is
I
that
know. I
looked it up. The first flashlight was patented in 1899. And if Dr. Worley is the kind of man who's in love with his machines and gadgets, he would have a fucking flashlight.
I think he's a little too in love with his machines. I mean, that's, hey, whatever you're into, your pansexuality. If you're into machines, that's your business.
I don't know. I just love it because that's what I'm here for. Because Elizabeth is like, I looked it up, bitches.
Because I texted her and I'm like, as soon as I saw a flashlight, like, out of reality, this can't be.
And I can't see the type, like, I can't, it's so quick, like, with her hand movement, I can't see, like, if it is a bronze flashlight, which would tell us a lot, it's black, then it would make sense-ish. Also, this is a fantasy film.
Okay, so are the worlds, like, more true to the books as well? Like, so you said that the characters were, and every character that we meet is part of the books, but are the worlds as also, like, more
true?
Like, there's the desert of death?
The deadly desert, the Gnome King's Mountain, Princess Mombi's castle with the tower, like, that's all there.
The Wheelers?
She switches heads, although Mombi has a different name in the books. I was trying to look at pictures earlier.
Can I just say the Wheelers remind me of the punks from the Warriors?
Oh, I love that movie too. Can we save a date for that one?
We did talk about the Warriors in a very early podcast, but I'd be happy to revisit all the problems of the Warriors.
Great.
There are.
Well, Mombi is there. Mombi is not beautiful.
When she has the right head on her.
Right.
When she's not using the Bav Morda head.
Right. That's a whole nother thing. And I don't know if you guys looked at as much of the details as you could in the beginning before she goes to Oz the second time. You know, Nicole Williamson, you know, Dr. Worley's wearing a ruby ring. There's a lot of greenery. There's a lot of, there's actually a head, you know, a deer head in his office. We've got the jack-o'-lantern, which is combed with a ruby comb. The room that she stays in is room 31, which is also the number of the cabinet of Mombi's original head. So there's a lot of different tie-ins from her real world. It kind of does an accordion effect. We start in the beginning, we're like picking up tidbits, and TikTok, you know, the electric shock therapy robot, which turns out to be her savior.
Not the app.
And then it expands into the world of Oz, and then when she comes back, it's okay to deal with these things as long as it's in secret. We don't tell anyone, but she can still connect with the world.
Let me ask you this. In the books, how many times does she return to Oz? Is it multiple times?
It's multiple times, but eventually Baum writes that when he gets tired of writing these books, because he gets so many letters over the years from different kids, like, please write more books, please write more books, that he eventually says that no one can enter the land of Oz ever again. So, and then he dies.
Wow.
So do we want to talk? So I want to talk about gripes, but I also want to talk about what people love. So from the people, do we want to hear from the people that love it first or the gripes from the people who hate it first?
Gripes.
That Scarecrow costume is like the most amateur costume I've ever seen in my entire, his face doesn't move.
Just want you to, you can't see it. But that's
a drawing versus this was an
actual. The original look for the Scarecrow. That's
That like the Tin Man and the Scarecrow, they were all much more true to like what the
look. even Dorothy's outfit, it's not, she never wears blue gingham, she wears that outfit in the first book, like that's her costume.
Yeah, and see, that's what I was so afraid of. I knew this was going to happen. Like, I knew it was. I knew that, like, I wasn't going to like it because...
It's a bad movie.
Well, there are flaws. I mean, but it was also made between 1980 and 1985, so you have to expect those types of things.
And budget cuts. You got to remember, Disney was pretty sure this was going to fail, so they put as little effort into it as possible. And if the Jim Henson Company and Will Vinton's Claymation Company hadn't come in, the production would have been, I mean, a whole big bad bag of crap. It would have been terrible.
And here's the thing. You know what? We're talking about gripes first.
Gripes.
Here's what I really want to know, because when we get down to it, the nitty gritty of it, for me, Kevin, and you can say what you want, like Scarecrow face, all that, because I was aware, at least in that regard, that those things were true to the books, like especially the way the Tin Man, the Scarecrow, and the Cowardly Lion looked, and those types of things. And now I'm learning more about the other characters and about the world and the whole idea that, like, it wasn't, like, there is some other world, I don't know, in a parallel universe that she's finding her way to, like, that, you know, after being in love with the first movie, like, that's a little bit hard to.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
But for me, it's always the end, and I'm like, oh my, did he just get poisoned by a motherfucking chicken egg? Like, did that just happen right now? Like, did we just go through all of this? We just went through all of this, like, intense crap.
Don't eat your eggs, folks.
And all of it, and like, there is a talking chicken, and I don't have chickens and I don't raise chickens, so maybe I cannot understand the bond that one would have with the chicken. But there's a chicken that all these people are afraid of that lays an egg and kills the gnome king. Like, I'm sorry.
What? Is it like the Kroll thing, like where he just had the power in him all along?
That was my whole thing. It was like, I was ready. I was ready for it. I had issues. I had problems with the, you know, the movie. And I knew that Elizabeth was going to come back here and say, like, oh, but this is all part of the book. And you have to own this, to honor the story for what it is. And here's the whole story behind the movie. And I was going to be like, okay, yes, I can understand all of that. So, but the chicken, I just don't know if I can handle.
This is a lesson to all you kids. Don't eat your eggs.
Is there a chicken egg in the book, Elizabeth?
There is.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. They foreshadow it the whole movie. They're like, don't let that chicken near him.
Oh, that's the Gnome King. And that's Selena. But yeah, something about the eggs. And I tried to look more into, like, why an egg was chosen. And
why?
There's a lot of theories, and I guess, you know, that's I don't know, something about the Gnome King and his materialistic capitalist nature and enslaving people, and then like that Dorothy the Everyman can defeat him with something as simple and agricultural as an egg, and feminine as an egg, like yay girl power, but that's a pretty big stretch for me. I really want to say that Baum was just looking for something, I don't know, maybe simple and slightly silly to defeat someone so evil. Now, the Gnome King does not look like what he does in the books compared to the movie at all.
Is he more of like a gnome
character? He's a little fat, short gnome with a beard, a round teardrop shape.
Like we're thinking Dungeons and Dragons type of gnomes here.
Right.
Like G-N-O-M-E.
Right. And in the book, it's N-O-M-E.
Is the whole story like about he's stone and like the more that he, the more Emerald City people he takes on, like the more he becomes, is all that legit?
He looks like a Dr. Seuss character.
He does. There is no tie to the books about him becoming more human. That is completely, I think, because they were using Will Venton and his company for claymation, that they wanted to really just kind of explore that whole idea, because they do model, they had like Nicole Williamson and what's his name, Pons Mar, who is the lead wheeler, and he also does the voices for a lot of the gnomes. They like mapped out their faces while they were acting to really get what they look like and their expressions, so that when he became more human, it would match up with him. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
More gripes.
How can a flying couch fly when your wings are palm trees? There's nothing for the wind to grasp.
It's the powder of life, and it's a fantasy. It's a fantasy.
A powder of life, but yes, can make him alive, but that does not explain the power of flight.
Which, by the way, the instructions for the powder of life are word for word, like how it looks on the back. Also, TikTok's instructions are word for word on his back, even though she winds the wrong one time for thinking.
Yeah.
Also, the character of Gump, who just all of a sudden existed. At a certain point, I just don't feel it's believable that he has a bond with these characters when he just literally came to life and has been alive less than a day.
Well, he's not. It's the second time being alive, first of all.
The first time he was alive, he was shot, so he should be really bitter about that.
He is bitter. He's a bitter old Gump, and he's not like touchy-feely and like, let me hug you with my palm fronds or whatever.
Right. He's a little bit of an Eeyore.
He is a bit of an Eeyore, for sure.
Sometimes I felt the characters in here were just substitute for the other characters in Oz. Yes, I know they were written beforehand, but Jack is a stand-in for the Scarecrow. TikTok's a stand-in for the...
Robin, what are we looking at? It's blurry.
I can't see because you're blurred.
God damn it. I know. We deal with this every time. Anyway.
What was it?
It's totally accurate. Like, the palm trees, like, it looks just like it does in the books, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kevin. I knew. And it's funny, because, Kevin, you're, like, nitpicking all the things that are, like, literal about it. Like, how could this be possible, and how could this be possible? And, like, none of that really bothered me, because... I was able to suspend belief.
Oh, and I'll pick the part of bad acting in here.
What?
The Dorothy, I understand she was 10 years old, but yeah.
Oh, I loved her acting.
I strongly disagree.
I thought she was fantastic.
No, Kevin, no. She was freaking awesome. And there's a moment where she's picking up a brick from the Elbic Road, and she sounds just like Judy Garland for just a second, and like tears my heart out. She says, no, Belina, this was the Yellow Brick Road. And you're like, oh, that sounds just like her. She looks like
I thought she did
girl.
A fantastic job. She was one of my favorite things about it.
Yeah. Sorry.
I'm not easily impressed by children actors either.
You know who else was on that list? Was Juliette Lewis. Oh God.
Halo.
other girls that were considered, but she beat out like over 10,000 girls for that.
It was her first, it was her first film, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. It was her first feature film. She was in the best Christmas pageant ever, but I think that was like on made for TV or something.
Jared, I mean, you also just like the film. Can you back?
You unlocked a memory in Barrett's mind.
My God, out of the black night. Oh my God. Love. There it is.
Yes.
What just happened?
She had a memory.
I think I like it more and more. I knew this was going to happen.
Jared, please back me up on something you hate about this movie. You said you liked it when you first talked to me about it.
Yeah, I mean, I did have some issues with it, but it was, you know, it was because I think that I had to like break up with the original film, like in a way, but I knew, but here's the thing, Kevin, like I knew that like my dislike wasn't going to hold water because I knew that people were going to come back and say to me that like the original literature, like that this was more true to the original literature. And like, if you like the type of person that I am, like believes in that like sacredness to a degree, you know, like
loyalty.
I get that they were honoring the story in a way. And because it was made because it was a low budget fantasy film made between the years 1980 and 1985. Like, I get it.
Yeah.
Feels you know? So betrayed.
So I found the list of other girls.
Yay! I was hoping you would. Yay!
So first of all, hang on, where did it go? Christopher Lloyd was almost cast in it, too.
As the Gnome King. As was Leo Kern from Lady.
Yeah. So, okay.
Great Scott.
That would have been so weird.
So, Drew Barrymore.
Yes.
This is the weird one. Alanis Morissette.
Yes.
That's ironic.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, I don't know who this person is. Tony Ann Jassotti.
Wait.
I don't know who that is.
Was this
Elizabeth Berkeley and Juliet Lewis?
Would this have been before or after her time on You Can't Do That on television?
Alanis?
Before. You Can't Do That on Television was like 89 or 90, question mark.
The fact that Elizabeth also remembers that show, I am very impressed.
I also remember Roundhouse. Nobody ever remembers.
I did like Roundhouse.
Love Roundhouse.
Are You Afraid of the Dark?
I loved Are You Afraid of the Dark.
That shit was good.
Yeah.
Dark and creepy. Loved it.
Oh, classic Nick.
Can we also talk about some links real quick, like super fun links?
Are we talking about web links or?
No, we're talking about links to other films. So Belina was voiced by Denise Breyer, who also voiced Hoggle and the Junk Lady in Labyrinth.
Okay.
Deep Roy, who was in The NeverEnding Story. Is the Tin Man's voice in Return to Oz. And then, of course, we've already made the link for Gene Marsh.
Tin Man Talking.
What?
I barely remembered the Tin Man talking in this.
Barely talked. Yes, that's true. It was also nominated for 2 Saturn Awards, but lost Best Fantasy Film.
I knew you were going to bring this up.
To Lady Hawk.
I knew you were going to bring that up.
Oz lost Best Fantasy Film to Lady Hawk.
Yes. And Best Younger Actor went to Barrett Oliver for Daryl, which I think I've seen one time ever.
Okay.
Who was in The NeverEnding Story?
I had to pick one of them to watch again. Oh, I would probably pick Lady Hawk.
Really? I'll watch it with you.
I've only seen that one. Is that Matthew Broderick?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
That was our season premiere of the podcast, right?
I remember y'all doing that. Yeah.
Just a wee bit.
Right away. Months later, the Lady Hawk Facebook page liked our post.
No, really?
They were like, someone remembered this film?
That is so funny.
It's the same thing, though, because it's like that 1980s to 1985.
Before CGI ruins literally everything.
And the actor lineup in that movie is too legit to quit. I'm sorry. But yeah, it just is. You cannot escape it. Like, you cannot. You cannot.
Are we done with gripes? Can I talk about things I love?
Yes, you could talk about things you love.
I love the craftsmanship behind this film. I think it's absolutely brilliant. I think the design is brilliant. I think the puppetry is, obviously it's Henson, and it's Henson's creepy stuff, which is totally masterful. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got, I don't know if you guys have ever seen the pictures of the guy that's inside TikTok, but it's a gymnast. He's like 20 something and he's like 5'5". And he steps inside TikTok backwards, bends all the way over, and they strap his back in, and he's got a television that he watches upside down inside of TikTok, and he's walking backwards inside of TikTok. And I'm like, that's incredible. And then you've got like this extremely tall guy who's a mime, who is the body of Jack Pumpkinhead. And then there's two additional puppets, because you can see in the neck, like when it's the mime and when it's the puppet, because you can see how thick his neck is. And then you've got like all the mirror tricks, that whole mirror room, like doing puppets in a mirror room. Whoa. I love it all. I love the claymation. I think it's just a really great blend of good craft and like low budget, but that achieves something truly great. I love the soundtrack, which is done by David Shire, and the London Symphony Orchestra, I think is really beautiful. And I love the ragtime feel that it has with it. So those are things that I really, really love that don't have anything to do with the plot.
It's interesting though that you said that about the soundtrack, because I remember thinking at the ending credits, like, this music sounds significant. You know what I mean? Like, it, you know, like, it matters, like, in a cinematic way. And that I was impressed by that. And also, the, like you said, like, the craftsmanship, the artistry of it, it reminded me of Neverending Story in a certain way. Like, yes. the worlds that they traveled through.
Yes.
Reminded me of that in a way.
Yeah, I agree 100%. They have lit the flashlight listed as a goof on the IMDb page. I saw that.
Yeah.
But I also,
for those who are listening to the podcast and aren't in this podcast, Elizabeth rolled her eyes at Robin's fact check.
It wasn't an intentional fact check. I was just on the IMDb page.
No, either it could go either way. Like, if it's listed as a goof, I've also seen flashlights that were patented in 1899 that were the same shape, and they did exist with batteries. So I could go either way. It could be very wrong, but I could go either way.
Wow. Do you have any more things you would like to pledge your love of before I'm going to ask you a question about the next podcast, Elizabeth?
I want to profess my love.
Professor,
I thought the little girl was kick-ass. I was like, why do I recognize her?
She's from The Craft.
Oh, I know exactly who she is. She just looks so different because she's not gawked out like she usually is. I'm used to seeing her grown up. I thought she did a great job. I thought it was really good casting. And also, like, immediately, because I remember my dad loving the books and being iffy about the musical and the musical movie, just being like, yeah, it's fine. It is what it is, but it's not the books. And my dad passed away a long time ago. I wish I could ask him if he ever saw this movie.
Yeah.
Because I feel like he would have enjoyed it a lot more. Also, like, we have to, I think, I could be totally wrong, but it seems like the way The Wizard of Oz, like, the Cowardly Lion and the Scarecrow and Tin Man were done was so they could sing and dance, because you couldn't, they had to be practical in the most practical ways. Like, they couldn't have a lion. They had
Don't
to have
you just
a guy
wanna
dressed
break
up,
out into
like,
song, okay. Robin? And
no,
dance?
I've been in this musical and I'm not super into it. Yeah.
I will agree. It's fine.
But yeah.
I just wanted to dance.
I get that Dazed and Confused reference. But yeah, I like the idea of them looking more like how the Scarecrow looked. I get why they couldn't do it that way in the other movie or with the lion. I also was like, oh, there's a real lion. But yeah, I liked this way more than I was expecting to, actually.
Was this your first time seeing it?
Yeah. I watched it this morning.
That's so cool. That's so cool. Like, I am so jealous of you seeing it for the first time.
Yeah, I liked it. I liked it a lot. I knew Kevin didn't like it because he texted me and asked me if I liked it. And when I said I did, he stopped responding to me.
I could stop responding for many ways because most of the time I'm texting at work. And yeah. And it gets busy at work at times.
Uh-huh.
Sure. They all say.
Yeah.
I'm really glad you liked it. That makes my heart happy.
Yeah, I liked it a lot.
Yeah, like, how do you feel about the end? I was a little pissed. I'm not going to lie.
About the egg or when she went, once she was back?
When she was back.
Yeah, I didn't like how abusive her aunt and uncle had been to her, and then they're all of a sudden like, oh, we love you, like,
yeah.
Well, yeah. I think, like, you know, Aunt Em, she's a homesteader, right? Like, uh-huh. She is so, and she's probably pissed. She's not, obviously she's pissed because she is trying to take care of this gimp farm by herself. You know, Uncle Henry, like, the man, that leg is mended.
Yeah, it's been mended, is what she said. That leg has been mended.
It's been mended. And she's like washing off those eggs, and I'm like, she's about to crush one of them.
Oh, and also he ran real fast to Dorothy.
Real fast.
He heard her crying.
Because that leg is mended.
Yes, that leg has been amended.
She's probably, I really think, you know, Aunt Em is a really practical gal, and she's just looking for answers, and she's looking for help. And then, you know, they come into this, like, crazy thing where they lose her again. I don't know. I'm kind of sad because I want her to go back, and it's not, like, some crazy troublesome thing, but then we wouldn't have a story, right? But she finds balance in accepting the fact that it is real, and, like, she doesn't have to have anyone necessarily, like, believe her because she can see it. And she also knows that growing older, she's going to have to try to keep it to herself, which doesn't really help her. I don't know what the future of Dorothy looks like. Yeah. I'd really like to see, you know, Dorothy and Alice get together in an alternate universe and, like, kick major ass, but, you know, right. I don't know.
Well, since you've read the books, Elizabeth, what was the future for Dorothy?
I honestly, she kind of fades out, and there's a lot of other characters that come
go
in.
Go to Oz, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of characters that go to Oz. So, yeah.
Well,
it's like Peter Pan when the kids grow up. They're like people on their line start going.
And they become a fat Robin Williams?
Well, no, and Wendy can't keep going because she grew up. And so
the
kids have to go.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of sad.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a nice, tidy ending. And Dorothy doesn't get electroshock therapy. And her uncle is well. And her aunt is happy. And she has her own room. And everything is okay.
Keep Oz secret. Keep it safe.
Yeah, keep it secret, Ozma says. Who is dubbed, by the way. Ozma
yeah, because she was too British.
She was too British, and her voice is dubbed by Beatrice Murch, Walter Murch's daughter.
And I read this morning.
Keep all secret. Keep
it safe. That girl like went through a crazy wild child phase. The girl who
plays really?
Ozma. Yeah. She's like, when you Google her name, it's like the original wild child of Hollywood.
Emma Ridley.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I got to look that up. I got to see what that's about.
She was really hot.
Someone says, this actor is too British.
I know. But remember in Crawl, Lissa's voice is completely dubbed because they hated her, the way her voice sounded. And then she was like, Corwin, and it doesn't even match up.
And now we just hire British actors all the time.
Yeah. To play Roger.
Well, Elizabeth, I wanted to give you a choice for an upcoming podcast. So we are definitely doing, next time you come on, it will be one of my favorite movies, Big Trouble in Little China.
I also like that movie. Not a love, a like and appreciation.
I feel there should have been more movies about the adventures of Jack Burton and the Pork Chop Express.
Oh, God. I'm just remembering all the, never mind. Go on.
But after that, in our next season, I'm going to let you choose one of two movies.
Oh, God.
Another dark fantasy. You get to choose either between Labyrinth or Legend.
Ah! How am I supposed to choose? Why can't we do both?
You get to choose which one's next.
Oh, okay. So we'll get the other ones later. Yeah. Do I explore my bisexual fantasies with Labyrinth or do I want to explore?
The reason Willow's not on this list is I promised Willow when the television show comes.
Tell me.
Totally fine.
To Adrian Godinez.
Totally fine.
Who will murder me with a sword if I have that episode without him.
Oh, no, totally fine. That's totally fine. Can we do the Ewok adventure?
God, no.
Oh,
Star Wars even I won't do, and those are going to be Ewok movies and the Hollywood special.
I'll do Legend first because I have to get really prepped if we're going to talk about how confused I was in daycare watching Labyrinth and going,
is that the one about your bisexual fantasy?
Yeah, dude. I first realized, I was like, I like both of these things.
Was the bisexual fantasy with David Bowie?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Yes. Kidnap me. Goblin King. Yeah. Yes. We'll do Legend first.
All right. So in the next season, after we get to do Big Trouble Little China, we'll have Legend.
Can we do like final thoughts?
Yes, we can. And I will talk to you later about Cousin Vinny.
Oh, no. Okay.
Oh, boy.
Go ahead. Your final thoughts.
It will remain a favorite, warts and all. I love that movie. I probably watch it one or two times a year. So It's special to me. Like, my key to the barn.
Must have turned it 1,000 times.
Whatever, Kevin.
Robin, any final thoughts?
It is my first time watching it, and I'm a full-grown adult, and I really enjoyed it. It's not even like a nostalgia factor thing to me. I really liked it. So if you like darker shit and are prepared, I liked it. If you like the Oz stuff and are down with it getting dark, I think you should visit this if you haven't already. I may rewatch it.
My final thought is it was also my first time watching it.
Mm.
As an adult, I watched it yesterday, and I will say that like I really didn't like it like at first when I first watched it. There were some things about it that felt so forced to me. But that's, I think, because of my personal relationship with the MGM Wizard of Oz. So what I will say about this is, after this conversation, and coming into it, I knew this was going to happen. After this conversation, like, I can appreciate it, you know? Like, I can understand and really appreciate it. And I feel so much more well-informed about, you know, the cultural aspect of it as a whole. So that's my final thought.
Woohoo!
My final thought is I thought we were watching an HBO prison series. That's been the Simple Broken Mind podcast. I'm your host, Kevin.
I'm Robin.
I'm Elizabeth.
I'm Garrett.
You guys have a good night.